This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, the Ghost of Harrenhal, A Bannerman Has No Name, Lord Thanos of House Titan, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed, and Sir Dustin of House Walls.
Hello and welcome to Bend of the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Welcome to Follow Up Friday. We answer your questions about Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 1, as well as make a few bold predictions for Episode 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and and I think we have one or two that's going to discuss kind of like the overarching theme a little bit. But yeah, Follow Up Friday. Glad to have it back so we can get going here with the season. It's got a lot of fun. We've received we've got a coop full of ravens.
Just tell them what's happening. I mean, the inbox is completely full. Google almost shut it down. There was too much traffic in there.
So. I don't know what ravens eat, but we're out.
So, we are definitely out. So, really, really thankful for the response that we got. We have a lot
absolutely.
Of folks, new listeners. We've got listeners who've been listening for a long time and have sent in ravens, excited about the show. So, we're ready to get after it. Answer your questions and then. Make some bold predictions too. So,
Sreza and I have watched the episode 2 preview. We're going to talk about that in a second. But first, I want to announce something. Trivia. I mean, Follow Up Friday's back. I mean, are we going to bring back trivia?
Exactly. Yeah.
Sreza.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're going to do a trivia giveaway. All you have to do is be in our Facebook group, leave a comment, obviously with the correct answer. And we will announce the winner next week, and we're going to do a Funko Pop giveaway. So the trivia question will be, what color are Tormund Giantsbane's eyes?
That's tough. That's tough, friends.
It's tough, man. I don't know.
You're going to have to actually watch the episode.
Has he ever said it? I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, so make sure you get in the group and answer that question for sure.
Yeah, it'll be posted at the top. Okay, Sir Ezra. So, episode one was amazing, but now it's time to look ahead to episode 2. Woo! You and I both watched the teaser. There's obviously the full video is about a minute long, but it's really only about 30 to 40 seconds. Starts off, Jaime Lannister is being kind of questioned by Daenerys. What would we do to the man who murdered my father?
Right.
Then we get a little more Sansa and Daenerys kind of back and forth. Like, you should have never trusted, Cersei. Right. We get some of that. We get Jon. We see kind of Jon and Daenerys down in the crypts. We see then we start to see a little bit of like battle going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's getting real dark, and we see like Tyrion up on the walls. So, what are your thoughts about the teaser and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, I thought it was interesting. That was one of the things I kind of forgot when we had been talking before the season started. We were talking about the awkward conversations that were going to happen, the awkward meetups, mm-hmm. Between Tyrion and Jaime, killing Tyrion killing their father, and now I kind of forgot about Jaime killing the Mad King. I really think with that situation you're going to have some unlikely alliances. I think you're going to have I believe Brienne will step forward and kind of vouch for Jaime, and he might just, maybe it's his time to tell everyone that the Mad King was mad and wanted to blow up all of King's Landing. You know what I mean?
And, mm-hmm. Maybe this is where Bran comes out and says, hey, this is what happened. And we see it. Maybe it would be awesome to see that scene if we get a Bran flashback.
Yeah, I think that would be neat. And I do. When is Bran going to start doing those types of things? Mm-hmm. like telling us what's going down. I mean, we've seen a few things in regards to John's parentage, and we have a lot of folks in Ravens today who have asked about that, or who have theories or thoughts on how he's going to deliver some of his information, or why he's mm-hmm. pushing certain things and not other things. You know, so right. Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. You didn't give us much.
Do you believe that the friend he was referring to is Jamie?
I don't know. I actually think maybe like if he means friend in a different way, as in like friend of the realm or friend right. to them as an ally, that right. that would work.
Something that someone had commented on and in our group, and I apologize because we had so many. I remember seeing it, but they pointed out that it's funny that he is the three-eyed raven and he refers to him as a friend,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the blood raven, you know. Cold hands kind of connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably is. It is Jamie. Somebody had also sent us a comment about it possibly being Mira Reed, like Mira Reed coming back.
Oh, okay,
possibly yeah. with Howland Reed, and then that's how we get that. That's how we get that. We would get the Howland Reed in the
connection.
Show.
Yeah,
I would love to see that because that's how you and I have both said. We think it's going to go in the books. I'm not. I don't know if the show did that. That's gonna.
Yeah, I know that would be.
You'd have to really kind of spend a lot of time on mm-hmm. explaining really who this guy is and how he's important and a lot of stuff.
Right. Yeah. Someone real quick. We've got Sir Dave from Cincinnati who said that that he believes that Ghost or Nymeria may be the. Old friend that Bran is waiting for. I thought that was kind of interesting,
That'd be cool. And we're going to talk a little bit about a ghost here. We received a lot of ravens about where is Ghost. That's one of the things we're going to be talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Jaime, but if it does end up being, say, possibly Melisandre or somebody else, because I just don't, he doesn't really have a connection with Melisandre. So to me, I think it's Jamie. I could see the possibility of Mira Reed. And that would be a cool way to bring her back so that way she wasn't just kind of written off. If that
sure.
is the route
yeah.
they go to, they would go. I mean, we've already had a lot of shockers this season so far with only one episode, so you never know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm kind of with you. I mean, I think he said it at the beginning of the episode and then Jamie shows up. I mean, he could still be sitting there. Who knows? I feel like it was just ironic that he called him a friend, and I think friend just has a different meaning maybe to Bran, you know.
Right. So what do you think is going to happen with Jamie being on trial? Clearly we've seen in the trailers he's at least engaging in the battle of Winterfell.
Right. And that's what I was going to say is that, we know that he's fighting later on. So, I mean, that's why I believe people will come to his aid. She respects Tyrion. And, Brienne has probably impressed her as well, at her time at Winterfell. I don't know that we haven't seen a lot of interaction. This would just be someone honorable stepping forward to kind of vouch for him. And then if Bran does as well, we haven't seen Bran really interact with Daenerys either.
Right.
Right.
What I see, I'm kind of with you. I think obviously Tyrion will step forward and Daenerys may shut him down because it's her brother. And then possibly Brienne stepping forward. Mm-hmm. And then, I do believe Bran might say something.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know who else could standing. I mean, Varys. Varys would be the other person who could maybe confirm, that mm-hmm. the Mad King was as mad as Jaime is saying, and that he did the realm a service. You know, because Varys is somebody
right.
who's always saying that he's looking for friends of the realm. Or he's trying to work for the betterment of the realm. So.
Right. I wonder if that's how the show starts or if possibly John has a conversation with her first, or if she feels like maybe Daenerys is still going to be quick to act, but she will kind of think about what happened with Sam and, Sam's parents. And maybe that causes her to kind of, think about something.
Yeah. Maybe she says off with his head and then she reconsiders. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe something along those lines. So, other than that, we see like it seemed like the battle's approaching quickly. Obviously, we see Tormund, we see Jon and mm-hmm. Danny down in the crypts. So, I'm assuming we're going to have a little more kind of talk about Jon's parentage and then the battle's getting ready to start.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking the battle will start right. You're thinking at the end, right? It's not going to actually take place. Were were there catapults though? Were there things that were?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looked like some fighting was going on.
Yeah, maybe they were. Maybe they were. Maybe they were testing them or something. But yeah, I imagine this episode ends with, like, you know, we saw that shot in the trailers of like of a horse, like a dead horse, like putting its foot down.
Sure.
I think that's the final shot of episode two.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, this will come up in the Ravens here, but someone mentioned that the first fighting may happen not in the way that we think. It may actually be fighting within Winterfell mm-hmm. itself. So I thought that was pretty cool. That could happen this episode. So
yeah, I mean, you know what would be, you know what I think would be the most crazy thing would be if nobody died this episode.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Because if the battle doesn't start, then get ready, because episode three, they're all gone.
Yeah, yeah, just dying left and right. Oh man,
maybe it's like
crazy.
A tease. It's like, oh man, we're still holding out on some of these characters, and then episode three, it's like, oh no, it's time.
Yeah, I think that there could be a really unexpected, you know, death here in episode two. I feel like there has to be at least one. I don't know who that would be. To make a bold prediction, I we see all, like, most of our characters fighting in the war. So mm-hmm. you know, you hate to say Tormund.
I mean,
again,
maybe.
But,
yeah, well, Tormund, at least we see Tormund talking to Jon Snow. So I don't think, you know, you have Tormund and Beric Dondarrion, and I'm guessing they at least make it past the Night King down to Winterfell, because we see Beric in
The trailer.
In the trailer, yeah. So
yeah, I know. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think they've really done a good job of keeping some of that from us. I can't put my finger on someone who is going to die in episode two. So it's just, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of revelations, though. I think that's going to be the thing. It's the awkward meetings, as we said in the past, you know, just getting through some of these characters who haven't seen each other ever, never met or interacted, and, you know, those who have interacted before but have betrayed each other, and now they're coming back to face one another. So
mm-hmm. I think Ed is dying. You know, Dolor is Ed.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
I think he's the first death, and then that'll signify a couple things. One, okay, we've just lost a significant character. He's not. I mean, he's always been kind of a secondary character.
Yeah, yeah.
But it would also kind of signify, all right, the Night's Watch no longer exists.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. He is the commander.
Well, I guess,
right?
Sam is still, yes, yeah. I mean, he's kind of the de facto Lord Commander. We don't ever see him get chosen. But I went back and watched as I was doing my rewatch to get ready, when Jon Snow, like, walks out, like, the people, you know, the rest of the Night's Watch kind of walk up to him, and then they're like, you know, what should we do? And he's like, well, I'm not your Lord Commander. And then he's like, all right, go do this. And that's kind of how the episode kind of, yeah. Ends
right.
With Jon and Sansa leaving, yeah.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, you know, Ed is, he's not the watcher on the wall anymore, you know?
No.
He's not on the wall watching. So I don't know. It'd be cool if he had, like, an epic moment, though, you know, for the Night's mm-hmm. Watch kind of thing, like a last charge or something.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're going to have to ride down past, you know, I don't know if they're going to go around, but I mean, obviously we see Tormund show up, so obviously Tormund, and we saw in the trailers Beric, so we know at least those two get past the Night King to at least warn them.
Yeah,
but I think it could be a scenario where they're getting attacked, and you know, the Night's Watch stay. The last, like, you know, it looks like there's maybe five of them stay and hold it off so that they can go at least warn Winterfell.
Well, and that goes with their vows, you know, the horn that wakes the sleepers.
Absolutely.
You know, mm-hmm. So if they could go sound the alarm, you know,
right.
That's kind of like them fulfilling their vow, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how I think the episode's going to kind of go. I think that'll be kind of, I think there will be some sort of middle conflict, and then they end up getting there at the end. Well, towards the end, and then they're getting weaponry and stuff prepared for battle, and then it just ends with, it gets really dark, and here comes the Night King.
I would say one more bold prediction I have is that we're going to see a major rift continue to grow just between Sansa and Dany. I honestly think there should be some major showdown at the end of this season between those two. You know, both of them, I don't know, like, there's moments where you think they're going to heal that rift, or that, you know, Dany might do something to heal it, and then you see in the teaser trailer, the way she's talking to her and the way Sansa, you know, replies, that's just going to grow and grow and grow, in my opinion, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And also Jon as well. There's that Sansa-Jon kind of, mm-hmm. of riff as well. Yeah. And even possibly Aria, right? Like, even Aria is kind of had a little tiff with John at the beginning. I mean, just that one little brief thing where she's like, no, I'm like, Sansa and I are on the same page now.
Right. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. It's basically what she said. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And she's like the smartest woman I know. So.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we move on over into some ravens.
Yeah, and I thought what we'd do is we have a couple folks here who have just made their own predictions, things that they think are going to happen, you know, going forward. So we would list some of those. And again, we have so many ravens that we just could not get all of them here. We will do musings on Patreon with some of those ravens. We will do a bonus episode maybe on YouTube and things right. like that. But there's just so many that we weren't able to
there's
get them
so
all
many.
In.
It's yeah. awesome. It's a great problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Please keep sending them. Yeah. And some of these we've seen themes, so we've kind of you know, grouped a couple people. I have one, and I've grouped a handful of people that I saw messaged it. So you're still gonna get like a shout out. I'm just gonna kind of paraphrase some of these as well. So
yeah, so this is a big. This is Sir Dave from Cincinnati here, just kind of talking about the idea. One of his bold predictions is that Jon will prove his Targaryen heritage and worthiness to Dany and her followers by withstanding dragon breath. And I was like, wow. I mean, that's something that, you know, Dany does, you know, just that's how she wins over, you know, the Dothraki, you know, mm-hmm. in a sense, you know, she rises from those ashes and she's got three dragons on her, you know, I mean, she's naked as her name day and she's, you know,
right.
I don't know. I mean, that could be.
What if, and we don't know, you know, we see Viserion, the Night King's now the Night King's dragon.
Yep.
I don't believe clearly he uses it's like blue fire, right? Which I don't know if they're really trying to say it's in the show, like, as you know, we know, you know, there's different degrees of temperature
sure.
and things like that, or if they just wanted it to be blue because it looked cool. And then there is green wildfire.
Yeah.
So and we don't know if it is. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming it doesn't really look like it melts the wall. It just kind of, you know, looks like it kind of destroys the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I guess, is there some ice element to it? And that's maybe, you know, why Jon would be able to say survive that type of dragon fire.
Oh,
that
I see.
To happen.
Yeah, I see. Wow. I see what you're saying. He's able to withstand, you know, fire from both, you know, types of dragons. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be interesting.
I mean, we haven't seen anything like that. I'm just trying to think outside the box.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. And that's what we do is someone sends us something like this. I mean, I thought it was kind of a bold, you know, radical
Absolutely.
Prediction. I think it's pretty neat. So, yeah. Now, another prediction made by Sir Dave is just that Tyrion's big achievement in the season will be to negotiate the final deal, which will be to betroth Cersei's baby to Jon and Dany's baby. So there's
I can see that.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Right, right. There's this whole, you know, piece with the babies who, you know, that next generation and what's going to happen, you know, after the Battle of Winterfell and so on. So there's that,
right.
that whole other piece. Either the throne is still there or it's gone and everyone's in exile over to Essos, you know? Like, who knows? So.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Let's see. Another bold prediction here from Lady Ashley. She just says that, you know, we were talking about people that we didn't see in season 8, episode 1, and she said she wanted to mention Dario.
Yeah.
So I thought that was...
You and I have talked about that a little bit, whether or not Dario would be a character that we would see again.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I could see him is if perhaps he joined up with the Golden Company.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, something like that could be kind of cool. Like, we see him on the battlefield, or, you know, Daenerys sees him and then he dies. And
right.
But other than that, I don't, it'd be hard, I think, to bring him back. Or it could still be something maybe she thinks about or something, as kind of like something she gave up to come get this throne.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. Yeah. It was hard for me to imagine where Dario would come into play, but yeah, I'm not sure. Right. So, okay, you have a few here. I think we're going to move on just to regular ravens and questions and follow up.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give I received a handful of comments about basically where is Ghost? We didn't see him. We had a lady, Liz of House Lindstrom, McGill, Mantalone, Jared Thomas Black, and a handful of other people, basically all saying kind of the same thing. Where is Ghost? We didn't see him at all in episode one. I don't remember seeing him in any of the trailers. Do you think we will see Ghost? And possibly, I'm going to throw in as well, Sir Ezra, do you think we will see Nymeria episode two, or do you think further down the line?
Yeah, I feel like they're both going to show up during the Battle of Winterfell, and right. I feel like that's where we're going to see them, maybe with another pack of wolves. You know, if in the books, or, you know, we see giant, like, oh gosh, we see spiders, we see polar bears, we hear of giant spiders, right, and stuff. So would we see something like that, some other creatures that come with the Night King that maybe the direwolves are able to kind of help, you know, fend off or save a few mm-hmm. characters? That would be cool to see them come out of nowhere and do that. But yeah, I don't really know why we haven't seen them, to be honest.
Yeah. I probably because the CG is expensive.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest.
They have to tie that up. I mean, Ghost is the one, though. I mean, like, Nymeria, I get, has been just out in the wild doing, you know, her own thing. But Ghost, you just feel like he should be more in tune with Jon and just should be there. I don't know, like, whether he's just walking around or, I don't know. But Ghost also oftentimes has left and gone out on his own and come back at times just when Jon needs him. So I feel like that might be something we see just in the Battle of Winterfell. But
yeah,
I can't even honestly remember when was the last time we did see Ghost. Do you remember that in your rewatch?
He's really absent. He's really kind of absent. I know he's obviously in season five, mm-hmm. season six, and season seven. He's not really shown a lot, and I actually don't think he's shown at all in season seven.
Okay. Wow, I mean, I just read something here.
I don't think he is shown as in season seven at all. Because Jon isn't. He's not. Because Jon isn't even in Winterfell for almost all of season seven. He's down with Daenerys on Dragonstone.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. One of the visual effects supervisors, Joe Bauer, said that, you know, he said that we will see him again, definitely, and he's going to make a. This is something I just probably pulled up here. It's from.
No, I remember we read something. We read something about that.
Yeah, that he is going to come back.
Earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, it's he's set to make a pretty big comeback in the final six episodes. So that's what I mean. That does kind of confirm, I guess, that we would see him during the Battle of Winterfell, come at a time when he's most needed. You know.
Right.
So.
Right. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. I'm with you. I think Ghost will show up during the Battle of Winterfell. I also think Nymeria and a pack of wolves will show up during the Battle of Winterfell. And I think they'll both have tragic ends.
Oh, man. Yep. Probably. I don't know. Okay, so let's move on. Yeah, I'm glad people pointed that out because Ghost is definitely mm-hmm. really important and is someone we want to see come back. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so next you have, who do you have here?
I have Lord William Fryer.
Okay.
From, I don't even know how to pronounce that, Adelaide, Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is kind of a really long one here. I started my first desk job earlier this year in March and was suggested by friends to listen to podcasts. I searched Game of Thrones, and since finding Bend the Knee, I have been addicted. Sorry it's taken so long to participate, but you will have to forgive me, for this is my first time following a group/podcast of this type. My favorite part of the show is follow-up Fridays. Some of the Ravens coming in are so detailed, bringing up theories I would have never considered on my own. My favorites are any that take into consideration Rhaegar Targaryen, Ned Stark, or Sir Arthur Dayne, Sword of the Morning. They're all great men shrouded in mystery. I am show heavy, but have still not read the books. I first started watching Game of Thrones when it was first released. My best friend, who was reading the book, suggested we follow it together. Since the first episode, I have eagerly been awaiting the next, making a tradition of meeting each time, creating a huge feast of food and drink for the occasion. I have recently done a rewatch in anticipation for the new season. It's crazy how much more you notice in the little hints you find for the future. Absolutely.
Yeah.
My thought on Danny and John in the final season are that one of two things will happen. Danny and John get married, making the children, you know, like Targaryen children. So Danny is pregnant with triplets. It's kind of the three heads of the dragon thing. So one of these two things will happen. White Walkers are defeated, but right at the end, Danny falls into labor, similar to Summerhall, and dies in childbirth, leaving Jon on the throne with the future of the Targaryen family. Or Jon dies in the battle, killing or helping defeat the Night King, leaving Danny on the throne, surviving her birth of triplets. I don't see any situation where they both survive. The one who lives looking after the future of the Targaryen and the throne. This would definitely be a bittersweet ending. You have the power and... You have the power of the throne and the children, but you are alone, losing your love.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone but these two will be on the throne, and I don't think it will split into seven kingdoms. Some people have said that, right? They just go back to the seven kingdoms, so he doesn't have anything on that. He also gave us a little bit on his, his house history, Lord Fryer here. So he says, yeah. A small house with the fierce friendship and loyalty to the Danes, reading into our ancestral home of Fryer, located between Starfall and Blackmont. We have regularly been marrying off our sons and daughters with the Danes for generations to keep our connection strong. I believe the time is right when the realm is distracted by the coming undead army to the north to create a name for myself and bring back glory to Dorne. My house will finally press the advantage and defeat our weakened arch rivals, the Tarleys. Whoa.
Wow.
Who have lost their leader and future in Randall and Dickon. Hornhill will be taken for Dorne, and Fryer name will finally be known to the realm. I just want to say thank you guys for all the hard work. I cannot wait to see the result of all the theories when the final season is released. In the words of House Fryer, hard will be the battle we fight, but deep are our hearts. So thank you very much for that, Raven there, Lord Fryer.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are in that camp that, and I think you and I both said that we don't think John. We don't think John and Danny will both survive.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the bittersweet to it, right? Is that they're two really beloved characters,
right?
And one of them has to go, you know, and that's it. Not has to. I mean, it would be. It's like we're almost like lulled into thinking that we can't have that type of ending, and maybe we will. And the bitter part will be that some of our other favorite characters like Arya, you know, and Sansa and whoever don't make it. But I feel like the main two being Jon and Danny, like we're not lucky enough to keep them all to the end. We're lucky enough to see them, you know, get married and maybe have kids, as Lord Fryer says. But yeah, that is the bittersweetness to it. So I don't think we're going to see both of them, you know, live until the end. And I think actually the second where Jon dies, you know, again, though, that's the thing is like, John's already died, as you've said before, you know, and so he would die again, maybe have to die a true death with the Night King, or take the Night King's position, as some have said, and that would leave Dany on the throne with her babes. And the triplets bit is interesting. I didn't see that coming. You know, people have talked about her being pregnant, but wow, yeah, three heads of the dragon. I mean, sure,
yeah, three heads of the dragon. Yeah, and then what would that be like? You know what I mean? Like what would her three children do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, great Raven. Moving on here.
Okay. Yeah,
that's kind of what I have. I think I've lumped another one into one of yours. So, we'll just add that when we get down there.
Sure. So now we've got a few things, switching gears here. Just, we're going to focus in on the Night King for a couple here. We have Lady Christina has sent us something. So she says, hi, guys. So I'm not the most knowledgeable Game of Thrones person, but I kind of have this theory that the Night King is Azor Ahai and that he needs to get the Lightbringer to burn himself to save Westeros. I see him saving Westeros two ways, because the darkness could either be the White Walkers, but could also be the darkness that fighting for the throne has brought to Westeros. Well, that's interesting. So, like, the idea is that, like, you know, because of all the chaos in the Game of Thrones, you know, there's a darkness just in that, in vying for the throne. So she goes on to say, so the Night King, by coming and conquering with his army, is uniting Westeros, getting rid of the darkness brought on by the fight for the throne, and by then killing himself, obliterating the White Walkers. If there is that high, and I see what she's saying, like if there is that hive mind, you know, connection or that yeah. thrall, you know, connection, then maybe, right. yeah, killing himself would put an end to that, which that's interesting that he's coming back again. And some people have said, I mean, I think we've had Lord Adam Parker and others who have said that the Night King perhaps once was Azor Ahai or the last hero.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so it would be coming back again to save the kingdom. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. So anyways, and she also goes on to say that there could be obvious, you know, holes with the theory. And yeah. So yeah. Here's the thing. I mean, people send us stuff, Lady Christina, all the time. That is just it's just your thoughts, as you say. People are watching the show and they're interested in it and they want to make a prediction and a thought. And you're always welcome here on Bend the Knee. We'll read anything. I like what she's saying. I actually think there's a lot.
She's actually not the first person that has suggested something of that nature to us.
Sure.
We had a raven a while ago. Didn't somebody say that the Night King was actually like a good guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've had people. I mean, when you're looking for a twist, I mean, that's the big one.
Right.
You know, is that the bad guy ends up actually, you know, coming with a different point of view perspective and, mm-hmm. and is actually trying his or her best to save the day. So,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. So thanks again, Lady Christina. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Moving on here, Lady Page, we have something here.
And then I have another one. This is the one I had. And then we have Lady Page Gower and Lady Magdalene Geiger.
Yeah.
We'll reread these both because they're both very, very similar.
Very similar. Okay. So, yeah. So we'll start with Lady Page. She says, okay, so the symbol the Night King uses looks a lot like the Targaryen house symbol. Also, only the Targaryens can ride dragons. The only people we have seen ride a dragon in the show is Dany, Jon, and the Night King. Some say that it is only because the Night King changed the dragon, but what if it's because he is a Targaryen? Wow. And, mm-hmm. you know, you go back to some of our readings when, you know, Nettles and other Hugh the Hammer and some of those folks back in Fire and Blood and A World of Ice and Fire,
right?
You know, were called upon to become dragon riders because they had Targaryen blood, you know, and they had, mm-hmm. You know, they were bastard born. And so, yeah, that's interesting to mm-hmm. think about, you know, that he's able to ride a dragon.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to read Madeline's here. We can talk about them both.
Sure.
Hey, y'all, I saw this on Twitter in regards to the White Walker symbol. I don't believe this myself, but it's a possible theory. The spiral kind of, you know, that the White Walkers are constantly making. The spiral kind of resembles the Targaryen symbol, and it's possible the Night King is a Targaryen, and that's how he can ride a dragon. See, a lot of people have this thought. Now, I know the lore all says it's likely the Night King is a Stark, but I don't know which to believe, which is why I don't believe it, but who knows? Especially a lot of people have started pointing that out a lot more with mm-hmm. the last episode because we saw that symbol on fire and it looks, you know, it's like, oh, now we're seeing it in a different light, no pun intended. Yeah. But, you know, so it does, you know, people started making that comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I saw several, you know, different images of that burning with the side by side of the, you know, three heads of the dragon, Targaryen, you know, sigil. Mm-hmm. And I get it. It does look similar, doesn't it? You know, and then when you add in what, you know, Paige said there as well about the idea that, you know, the Night King is able to ride a dragon, you know, so there's a lot of hints there leading us to believe that. The crazy thing, and again, you get show and book being different, it's hard to kind of think of, you know, a Targaryen being the Night King just based upon what we know in the books. But, and that's why I think it's so cool when you have people who come in who are, you know, show heavy, who come up with that idea. I never would have thought that. I never would have come to that conclusion because of what I know about the Long Night and you know, the others and what have you. So, and the time at which they came and where the Targaryens were still in Valyria. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, and the show hasn't really ever... The show's never really discussed any of that.
No,
so the show could go in a different route, although I find it hard to believe, considering that they are going to be creating a prequel that's all about the Long Night, you know?
Yeah.
Also, they do reference... Well, they don't reference it directly in the show. they do on like the on the DVD extras, the season extras, the new DVDs and Blu-rays,
right,
where they have the we've discussed some of these, and if you haven't seen them, please go watch them on YouTube because they're really good. They're like little mini history or lore lessons, and they're told through like the voices of the characters. So like Jamie Lannister, the actor who plays Jamie Lannister, does one about like the Kingsguard and stuff like that. And so they reference kind of history aspects, you know, more drawn from the books that they kind of don't really talk about a lot. So they're really cool. And I do believe there is one about the Long Night in there. So super cool. And you and I have talked about this as well, Sir Ezra. There's really two things that there's really two questions that the show is going to answer a lot of like what happens, you know, what questions. The show is still yet to answer two why questions. Why did Rhaegar go after Lyanna? And why is the Night King marching? Even if it's just, we just know he's this big bad villain, but we really don't have any other reason behind his motivation other than that he is just the darkness.
Right.
So I hope we get at least something explaining, you know, a little bit more as to why he is marching.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, even if they don't tell us directly that, but they do something and we figure out who his target is, and then from that we say, well, why is his target Bran or John or whoever?
Right.
And if he identifies that person as who he's after, then we start to say, okay, you didn't give us everything, but you definitely pointed us in some direction, and your audience will then sort of be probably super hyped to go into this prequel, you know, show, you know. So I don't know, we need to know a little bit about our villain. We need to know what his motivations are to a certain extent, and sometimes we can get those just through his actions and what he is, what he's doing right now. He's just, you know, he's raising an army. That's all we really know, you know. So when he makes his attack or the way in which he attacks, I mean, we do know a lot from him. Just him trying to capture a dragon. He seems to be a showboat. Right. We've got a great raven about him being a showboat and kind of what he's doing there, toying with people in a sense. So there's a lot, but yeah, okay. So I don't know. I mean, that's all interesting. I think we've got to get those some of those answers, and I think we will. I'm just really fascinated to see how it happens. It's probably not going to be in conversation, so we are going to have to infer a lot. We're going to have to figure out where the connection is, or have Bran as an interpreter for us or something. I don't know. I often think of it's like if the Night King doesn't speak, I don't know if he'll use words or symbols or gestures or what's going to happen, but it's sort of like, you know, when Chewbacca speaks, we need Han to kind of interpret it. So someone's going to have to
It's going to be one of those.
Yeah.
One of those things. So,
okay,
cool. All right. Let's move on to the next one here.
This
is from Sir Michael.
Yeah, Sir Michael, yeah. So just a quick one here from him. He says, hey, guys, love the podcast. First time emailer, a long time listener. I got a thought. He says, why is Bran so eager to tell Jon he's the true king? The Army of the Dead is so close to Winterfell, it seems like it's something that can wait, unless Bran is the Night King and he wants to, you know, cause a rift in their relationship. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's really good. That's really good, Raven. It reminds me of season one, right, or book one, where they go, John and Sam go north, above, you know, north of the wall to take their vows, right? Yeah. And it's almost like they find the hand, and then they bring the body back, like the white back. And then, you know, it comes back to life, attacks Jor Mormont. It's almost like, was that, you know, like a Trojan horse?
Sure.
Yeah. Type of a thing, right? So is that the same thing? We do know that the Night King, you know, touched Bran, kind of branded him. Is it possible, you know, you have something going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I am, because I think the question is like, you know, if Bran is... Maybe it's now that Bran has become the three-eyed raven or the three-eyed crow, you know, that he is has this connection, and like he didn't know beforehand that he was the Night King. You know what I'm saying? I just don't. It's hard for me to put these two together. So the idea that Bran is the Night King, you know, that I don't know how that works. I think it is maybe a bad choice to kind of push. Like the other way you could look at it is that Bran is trying to give Jon the backing to unite everyone fully. Maybe he still sees that there's some, you know, some animosity between the different groups, and they need to unite, and so he's the more eligible candidate for the Seven Kingdoms to unite behind. But his queen is also Daenerys Targaryen. I mean, that would be, you know, really cool, but to cause a rift in their relationship, that's interesting. You know, yeah. I don't unless he really does know something about this Night King that we don't know about, that Brendan Rivers also didn't know about, because Brendan Rivers seemed to be his counterpart and seemed to be countering him, mm-hmm. you know, quite a bit up in the cave. So,
yeah, I think it's the other way around. I think it's more he's going to be the one to defeat the Night King, and Bran knows it, or Bran believes it, because if you look at what the Three-Eyed Raven, you know, in the show, it's never said he's, you know, he's Blood Raven, because Blood Raven's never been mentioned, but he's Blood Raven, you know, like that's
yeah.
in the books I think it's the same thing, is that he shows him like specific visions, right. You know, to kind of be like, okay, we're going to kind of tell you this story. I mean, a lot of them have to do with, you know, Jon. He shows him the Tower of Joy, you know, we're not ready to go up and see what happens yet. Then he shows him, like Lyanna right in as a kid. So he's kind of putting these pieces together for him.
Right.
So I think it's to show, hey, Jon is, you know, is the king, and he's going to be the one to defeat. He's going to be the one to defeat the Night King.
Yeah, I think so. To Sir Michael's question, though, is like, you know, does Bran have to, or, you know, does Jon need that information to defeat the Night King? Is that what you're saying? Is that,
I think,
like,
he does. I think he does.
Okay.
I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah. So in your mind, he's not trying to cause a rift in the relationship. He's just trying to, you know, prepare him for that battle.
Right. Well, I mean, think about this. We know Melisandre's coming back, right? Uh-huh. So we know Melisandre has used King's blood in the past to defeat enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this. So now we know, oh, Jon is a king. So I think that there's possibly something to do with that.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Yeah. 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 I see a lot of people talking about this whole Bran is the Night King and this twist, you know? So it's like, help me understand that a little bit. I mean, how would that work? You know, like, would he, because if Melisandre is coming back, maybe, you know, we've seen her read things the wrong way in her flames over and over and over again. But maybe she comes through in the end, and actually it is R'hllor, or it is her powers that help, you know, guide Jon Snow, and his brother, air quote, cousin, is not necessarily on his side. I mean, to Sir Michael's point, I mean, a lot of people have made the case that Bran is the Night King, or that the Night King's after Bran, because, you know, Bran created the Night King in some regard. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's
yeah,
very, very tricky.
I thought it was plausible, but I mean, now that we're already, you know, roughly like 20% through season one, or season eight, excuse me, I find it harder to believe.
Okay.
The brand is the Night King theory. I mean, a lot of it has to do with, you know, are all the brands the same person? Is Bran mm-hmm. Bran the Builder, because he went back in time, and that Bran may have to become a new Night King because he's the Three-Eyed Raven and he has that kind of power. So I think that there's a lot to do with that.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Wow. All right, so we have a pretty long raven here from Lord Adam Parker, per usual. would you like me to go ahead and read some of that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, so this is going back just to the symbol that we see, you know, and we've seen in the books, you know, the White Walkers, the others, are very artistic. You know, Old Nan tells us that, you know, they're artists, in a sense, the way they leave body parts around. And we saw in the Night King's creation, you know, as you zoom out, you see that symbol, and then we saw the symbol again here with the Umber, you know, child. So Lord Adam has a couple thoughts on that. He titles this, "The Night is Dark and Full of Circles." So let's see. A White Walker Crop Circle Raven. So here we go. This can who knows what this is going to entail. He says, from the sun, moon, and planets to the eyes that give us sight, the circle is everywhere in the natural world, but it's also stamped everywhere in the human-made world. From wheels, domes, to logos, to infographics, it's a form that is utterly pervasive. The first circular inscriptions have been dated to about 40,000 years ago, when ancient humans carved circle marks called petroglyphs into rocks, cave etchings or drawings like on Dragonstone. It's not clear what they were trying to achieve with them, but some of the oldest ones are, circles, spires, and possibly like the wheel, you know. You see that in different areas of the globe, in different areas of time, you can see there's some sort of fascination with circles, right? 10,000 years ago, the circle infiltrated every area of human knowledge, from architecture to urban planning, linguistics, objects. Today, it remains a dominant form in the world of information and design, but that still doesn't explain its omnipresence. There is only so much wisdom obtained from the earth. And don't forget, from the earth wisdom, right, with Lord Adam Parker. So for that, we must look into scientific theories about humans' obsession with circles. He says, we know that humans are more attracted to curved shapes than angular shapes. Well, preach it. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Something, the curves, my friends, don't forget them. Something backed by several recent studies, which makes sense from the evolutionary perspective. Data designer Manuel Lima describes in the Book of Circles, quote, it goes back to primitive roots in nature, where most shapes are curved in nature, he says. Quote, they're softer, they provide some safety as opposed to angular shapes, the teeth of animals, the hard shape of a rock. Those are, those signify danger. Another theory is that humans associate geographic shapes with emotions, and that circles correspond with happiness. The psychologist John Bazzilli conducted an experiment in 1978 in which he painted the faces of particular of participants black, and then added luminescent dots. When the participants were asked to perform expressions of happiness, the dots would form circular shape, upward, open shapes, while expressions of anger created downward angular forms, with the angry face shape activating the thing.
I don't know. Yeah.
In your brain. It's a thing in your brain. Sense of fear. Sense of fear. The circle, in the context of his research, is an abstract symbol for happiness, while the pointed triangular represents anger. All right, so a third theory has to do with the curved shape of the human eye, which slightly distorts the world at the edge of vision, similar to the distortion in a crystal ball or in fisheye lenses, though not quite so exaggerated. Circular shapes tend to complement this physical construction of the eye. Circles fit so well into the visual apparatus. Flowers are universal symbols of beauty. Every culture around the planet and throughout history has regarded them as objects of wonder. One aspect of their beauty is that they exhibit a special kind of symmetry. Flowers grow organically from a center that expands outward in the shape of a spiral and creates what we call rotational symmetry. You can spin a flower around and around and it looks basically the same, but not all spirals are created equal. It depends on the rotation in creating the spiral. For instance, we build a spiral at an angle of 90 degrees. I'm sorry, if we build a spiral at an angle of 90 degrees, we'd get a boring cross, does not resemble a circle at all, but rotate it at 45 degrees and we'd get the symbol left by the White Walkers at the last Earth. So the White Walkers have used spirals before. The Night King has a fondness for leaving behind his victims in spooky patterns. In the very first scene of season 1, episode 1, a man of the Night's Watch finds corpses in the woods lying in an eerie formation. It wasn't spiral, but creepy nonetheless. In season 3, episode 3, Jon Snow and a group of wildlings, including Mance Rayder, Tormund, and Egret, find dead horses beyond the wall in the shape of the spiral. The children of the forest have used it too. It turns out the White Walkers aren't the only ones associated with the spiral motif. While traveling back in time in Season 6, Episode 5, Bran discovers the same pattern in the stones surrounding the Weirwood tree where the Children of the Forest first created the Night King. The sequence shows Leaf stabbing the heart of a man with a shard of dragonglass, causing his eyes to turn blue, showing his transformation into a White Walker. In Season 7, we learn that the Children of the Forest often use the circular symbol in carvings as well, thanks to several ancient cave drawings Jon and Daenerys find in Dragonstone. Spirals and swirls appear around the cave, and one even appears next to a drawing of early humans. The White Walkers actually copied the Children of the Forest. In the behind-the-scenes interview from this Season 7 episode, Game of Thrones showrunner David Benioff confirmed that the White Walkers copied the symbols from their creators. Wow. Okay. So, quote, one of the things we learned from these cave paintings is that the White Walkers didn't come up with those images. They derived them from their creators, the Children of the Forest. These are patterns that have mystical significance for the Children of the Forest. We're not sure exactly what they signify, but spiral patterns are important in a lot of different cultures in our world, and it makes sense that they would be in this world as well. Okay. To summarize, what we saw at the last hearth with the Umbers is not a threat to Daenerys because it looks like the Targaryen sigil. The Night King doesn't know what the Targaryen three-headed dragon looks like. The White Walkers got their love of logarithmic spirals from the Children of the Forest, and we know that the Children of the Forest are an inspiration from old Celtic religion. The Celts of Old Drew, their religion from nature, as we learned about spirals, that their spirals are found all over in nature, from flowers to hurricanes to seashells, broccoli, and even our galaxy. Therefore, the Children of the Forest worship trees, rocks, water, everything in nature, and were inspired to recreate the very essence that makes up nature. The White Walkers are just following what they know, and they know the elements. Wowzers. So, Lord Adam Parker, I mean, that's a lot to say that simply the inspiration is just that they're, kind of mimicking the Children of the Forest, you know? I mean, they're, that's them marking their territory, right? I mean, I guess that's a sign that they've been there, you know, that's their handiwork, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's any, he kind of mentioned that there might be some magical aspect to that, or you know, it's part of a ritual. You look at what Melisandre did; she has a lot of rituals and things, and the words that she uses and the way that she burns people. You know, you see her on Dragonstone there doing that, bringing folks to R'hllor several seasons ago. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, and it does further, more kind of confirm or make us really wonder, like, how much can you trust the Children of the Forest? Is it just a mistake?
Right.
That they made, in creating the Night King, and then they've tried to undo that. How,
right, right. Well, I mean, it's also like if you look at the scene where the children create the Night King, right? There's all those like stones in the ground, right, in that kind of pattern, that kind of, and then there's that tree. I mean, think about it. Like we, obviously in like Christianity, we. Don't just, it's like it's worshiped in a church, right?
Sure.
So like, even though you have this kind of pillar, and a lot of churches have, like a big cross right in them. So, it's like, and then you kind of build it out from that, which is that symbol. So for the children, it's possible that a weirwood tree is like the middle, and then they kind of build out, right? And they just happen to build in that shape. So I think that maybe that could be something, because it's clearly a tree. It's a weirwood tree that they use to create the Night King. Where he's created, they have that kind of that stone pattern that goes out of it. And so maybe then that becomes their symbol. And then like a Lord Adam Parker is saying, then that symbol is drawn in like caves and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
That's the way, at least that's the way I kind of think about it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be any more significance to it other than, you know, what he puts out there is just that it's an identifying mark and that's all there is to it. Although, you know, I mean, I think one of his points in the books
we will. I think we'll get more. I don't think the show is going to spend very much time talking about the. I mean, I don't know. I feel like they should, right? I mean, at this point, especially they've referenced it so many times, like always the artist. We're going to need to know kind of what those symbols are. I hope they give us a little bit about it.
I hope they do too. I mean, I think one of his major points was that it's not. Yeah, going back, someone earlier just said that maybe, you know, he's using that artistry to identify with the Targaryen family, and then Lord Adam Parker saying, you know, the opposite of that. It's not a Targaryen threat. He's not, you know, pointing out that I'm coming after a Targaryen. I could go either way on it, quite frankly. I mean, I don't exactly know. You know, I think there's
clearly some sort of significance, and I think the show is going to have to explain it because they've referenced it enough times to make it significant.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that was cool. I mean, that's interesting. That's what Lord Adam Parker does. He takes us back to the Earth, and he takes us back to what we know now, and really what influences, you know, Gurren. Why does he incorporate some of the symbolism, the motifs that he, you know, that we see in A Game of Thrones? Where does he draw his inspiration from? You know, and so I think that's sort of the intent of that Raven. And I always love that. I always love, you know, to kind of bring it back to, to that, to the influence. So,
right.
All right, let's move on here. I mean, we've got the Doom of Westeros, I think, is next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hi, I have been... This is from Lady Tiffany Chambers. Yeah. Hi, I have been listening to your podcast for a while now, and it is the best I have heard. Anywho, I have two theories, yeah. What if... what if the Doom of Valyria foreshadowed the Doom of Westeros? But instead of fire, this time it is ice. Valyria was a great civilization, and Westeros currently is. Valyria's doom happened by fire, and it consumed everything by the black that ate the sky. Flames shot so high and so hot that the even dragons burned. What if that's the same fate for Westeros, but in ice? The Night King is the doom of Westeros. This is, of course, implying that no one makes it out alive, or that someone is writing about the events after the fact, sort of like the theory of Sam writing the Game of Thrones. My second theory is that what if Jon and Dany end up turning on each other and fighting? Game of Thrones is known to be full of twists, but it would be something that no one, or literally no one, saw coming. Or maybe they did this depending on how the next few episodes go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Just some thoughts to think about. Thanks for making such a great thought-provoking podcast.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lady Tiffany. We definitely appreciate that. And I do. That's an interesting, you know, parallel or whatever, some symmetry in and of itself. The idea that, you know, you have the Doom of Valyria coming from fire, you know, from fire, and then Westeros being doomed, you know, by ice. And, you know, maybe you do see a migration of, maybe that's the sad, the bittersweet is that, you know, we win, but, the Targaryens they can't really return to Valyria. We see in Fire and Blood, when they do, they come back with, you know, smoking fire burning, you know, worms inside of them and stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when Balerion, you know, takes that girl over to Valyria. So, I mean, maybe it is an uninhabitable place. You know, it's like that could be something that happens and they have to migrate to Essos again, which would be ironic, right? You know? And
yeah,
maybe that is what the children want. You know, maybe that's what they're going for, and that's the big...
Yeah, leave Westeros and go back where you came from.
Right. It's been, you know, thousands of years in the making, but, you know, they finally did it. You know, they broke the land, and they were able to get them out of there, so...
And all the children are gone to not see it, so...
Right, yeah, yeah, so... yeah, and we don't know. I mean, maybe they've, you know, they're all hiding down in those caves, deep down in the... You know, who knows? But, yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I think it's kind of neat just to see the flip side of that. I could see a lot of really important places, you know, keeps. I mean, even Winterfell, we love Winterfell, and it's already been kind of, you know, burned and messed up pretty badly from Theon and his capturing of Winterfell. So it would be kind of heartbreaking to see some of the places that we really like, even Castle Rock, which I don't like, but to see that place go to ruin, you know, and to see some of these great kingdoms and keeps, you know, be brought low would be, you know, really... really I mean, I don't know. That would hurt, you know, I think, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So the second theory, you know, what if John and Danny end up turning on each other? I actually think they're laying the groundwork for that, quite frankly.
Yeah, I can see it.
I really do. You know, you see Sam coming to him saying, you know, would you do that? Would you have killed my father and my brother? You know, and then we've even said earlier that maybe that's something Danny learns from, you know. But I don't know. You've got Sansa, who's also trying to, you know, tell John, like, I know what I'm talking about here. I've played this game and I know people. And even though we are fighting, you know, for the fate of Westeros, there are still other people who are looking to take advantage of this moment, you know, like Cersei and possibly Dany or whoever, you know. So Sansa's keeping an eye on her, and I think Arya really respects her for that. So there's definitely some rift or division between, you know, Jon, Dany, and Sansa and Arya, and I think Cersei would love that. So, you know, and now Sam's coming, you know, with his whole piece to Jon. I feel like there's going to be more that's going to... let's say, for example, that Danny, you know, says to the Kingslayer, you know, you're dead. Hang him. Take him outside and hang him. You know, and John has to step in and say, like, that's, hey, hold on. You know, that's not the way to rule. That's not the way to govern. And, you know, that would be interesting. It would be kind of a shocker, I think. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, I think there could definitely be a rift between John and Danny. I mean, when Daenerys finds out that John's the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, has a better claim than she does. That could definitely cause a riff.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah, that would be huge. So we'll see. I really think, you know, I actually kind of want to see that a little bit. I mean, I love that they're together. There's going to be this, you know, like even at the very end here, there's going to be more fighting and there's going to be more vying for, you know, position. And I kind of feel like John is the one who is in the right here. You know, we keep looking to John saying, no, he's seen this enemy, you know, and actually what's crazy is that Dany has as well. And she does still seem to be playing the Game of Thrones, and that, you know, I don't know. I don't know that I like that. You know, I like that John's just sort of like, it doesn't matter. I brought us allies. If I had to bend the knee, then I bend the knee. We have to win. We have to live and survive. We can figure this all out later. And I don't get that same vibe from Dany. I wish that I did. And maybe that's what we're going to see next episode, is her turning, you know, more into that leader. Because that's why people will look to John, and that's why they wanted him to be king. And they're all, you know, even, what's her name? Stark, Lyanna Stark, right? Or not, what's Mormont, the little Mormont girl, right?
Right. Right.
You know, she's upset.
Yeah, Lyanna Mormont, yeah.
Yeah. You know, she's upset that he's not, you know, king of the North, and I named you king. Yeah, well, you did, and your king made a kingly decision. You know what I mean? He went down and he did what good kings do, you know? He did what was best for the realm. So, I mean, he can take up his crown again later. He knows that.
Yeah, deal with it.
Deal with it. He's your king. You know, he's telling you what to do. So he said, hey, we're going to follow this queen for a while. All right. You know, maybe I'll have kids with her. Maybe I'll get married. You know, maybe I'll make her my queen. So there, you know, there you go. But there's definitely a big rift forming. And I think that's going to be this other layer to it. On top of just the actual physical, you know, the, you know, person versus person conflict, or, you know, person versus other slash white walker.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. So Lady Tiffany Chambers there. Thanks. Shout out to you. Really appreciate that. Raven, I think we have another Raven here, kind of a bigger one. We'll probably end with this one. And we'll have a little discussion here at the end. Sir Matt and I will. But this is one that we found. Actually, I'm sorry. We have two more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there we go. We have two more, because we have Lord Jason of Cyphrus here. He sent us a raven, which I will read here. We've got a pretty decent size. So he says, great listening to you guys. As always, wanted to send in what I thought of the episode, as well as what I think may happen moving forward. First off, I think the episode was really good, although it has received some criticism from fellow Game of Thrones fans. I did think there were a few funny parts, especially when Bran keeps making these ominous statements, such as the Night King. Yeah. The Night King has broken down the wall / has your dragon and is on the way. And nobody really bothers to ask him follow up questions on these things. And
I know,
just kind
yeah.
of. Yeah.
Like,
right.
Well, yeah. Like last season when Sam meets, you know, Bran.
Yeah.
He's like, He's like, I'm the three-eyed raven. You know, he's like, oh. You know, right. Like, okay.
Okay, yeah, nothing said about it, right? Yeah. And he goes on to say, you know, and they just kind of go about, you know, their business, what they're doing. There's no mention of it. So he says, also, I thought about when the Night King killed the Umber Kid and put the arms all over the wall. It's funny to imagine the Night King and his people all standing around pasting these arms to the wall for an hour and his followers all saying, a little to the right. Meanwhile, the Umber Kid screams in his ear as he's adjusting the arms and scares the Night King as he forgot he brought him back to life already. That is a funny image, actually, to see those guys, you know, kind of.
No. Okay, there. Yeah, right there.
Oh, man. He says, but more seriously, I can foresee a problem with Dany and somebody that John loves, whether that be a Stark family member. For instance, Sansa might continue being bitchy towards her or betray her somehow, and Dany does not take that very well and wants to kill Sansa because nobody disobeys the queen. This could put John in a very interesting situation to try to calm her down or even have to reveal to her that he is the rightful heir to the throne and she needs to step down. Let's go.
Wow.
Bend the knee. if this were to happen, she may have no choice but to try to kill him with her dragons, which they could disobey her and try to burn him, but he is unable to be burned. That's cool, because that kind of goes back with what someone else was saying earlier, that he would be tried by fire, literally. Interesting situation, yeah. I could also see her wanting to kill Jaime, but the Jon/Tyrion/Bran don't want that and could see something go down with all that as well. Yeah, that's kind of what I had just mentioned, right? We were talking about the fact that she is, the way she governs, you know, Tyrion has seen issues with it and maybe elements of the madness or, you know, hints of the madness that was once in her father. I've also, you know, read about the fact that Bran, could be using ravens all over Winterfell to spy in on everyone's conversations so he knows everything that is going on with everyone. That's interesting. Lastly, I have a question for you guys. If the Unsullied went up against the Golden Company, who would win that battle? I have found that very interesting. 20,000 gold Company soldiers with no elephants versus the Unsullied, which I believe they're about 10 to 15,000. Oh, boy. That's a... yeah, let's answer that question first, Sir Matt. I mean, what do we think there? Who wins in a fight there, the Unsullied or the Golden Company?
I'd have to say the Unsullied, man. I mean, the Golden Company, we just know are kind of, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, they're notorious.
They're notorious, but we've never seen them in action, and we have seen the the Unsullied in action.
Yeah, and.
The Unsullied are like a different breed, though, right? Like,
yeah.
If you think about the difference between like Spartans and Romans, you know, Spartans are trained like from the get go, and that's what these Unsullied are. These Unsullied are trained from the get go, whereas all we just know that the Golden Company are notorious and they're really good and they're sellswords, and you know they've never dishonored a contract, but.
Right.
We don't know, you know, the Unsullied we know a little bit more about. So I would have to pick the Unsullied just because we know a little bit more about them.
Yeah, they're fearless and they seem to be more, you know, more disciplined and things. Yeah, I'm with you on that, actually. Yeah. And I think Grey Worm, just knowing, you know, who he is and seeing him in command is, I don't know, it's epic. So I got to go with the, even if they are underdogs, you know, I would still go with them, I think, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The other question is, you know, also, do you think it's possible for the Night King to be the Mad King somehow, which would make Dany switch sides if she found out? Now, that's interesting. I don't know. What I think we've thought about in the past is that if the Night King does have the powers that we think he has, and, you know, the three-eyed Raven was trying to recruit individuals to come north of the wall to take his place to you know, keep the Night King at bay. If the Three-Eyed Raven has that kind of power and the Night King has maybe a similar power, then he could be doing things like invading, you know, the Mad King's mind. He could be helping him, you know, grow mad and go and grow crazy. I don't think, though, that he's actually the the, you know, I don't think the Night King is the Mad King, you know?
Right. I think the only way I think there's definitely a possibility that Bran influenced the Mad King. And then if you go into the Bran is the Night King theory, then yeah, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think that the Mad King is the Night King.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a situation where Dany would switch sides, though, you know, where she would fight with the Night King. And you know, we keep looking at that Targaryen sigil and the shaping that he has of the bodies. I don't believe he's a Targaryen, but if he were, I could see that putting her, you know, in a bit of a pickle, because she really identifies with that name. I don't think, you know, Jon, even if Jon finds out that he's a Targaryen, he doesn't fully identify with that name.
So. Right. And even Daenerys has, you know, like Daenerys tells her brother off, you know, towards the end of his life, like, you know, Khal Drogo's the one who's going to take the throne and I'm going to bear his child. So even then it's kind of like, she's like, I don't want to just put the Targaryens on the throne. I want it. So yeah. I don't see her siding with the Night King in any situation.
Yeah. It had to be some major twist.
I do think there could be that rift between her and Jon. Right. Where
sure.
It's like, well, you know, but Jon's like, I don't want it. So.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Another question here. And could the dragons be actual reincarnations of the people they were named after? Meaning Jon is actually writing his dad and Dany is writing her husband. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, I have seen. There is something interesting about that, right? We talked about that before. Somebody sent us a raven many mm-hmm. episodes ago about the significance of the naming of her dragons and like the prefix and suffixes of mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're reincarnations of them, but everyone is dead by the time they are named, so that could maybe mm-hmm. they could be kind of cool. There is a big belief though that the dragons kind of their spirit lives on as it goes further, and that Drogo is Balerion kind of reincarnated.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm not so sure on the. It would be neat if there was some element or some characteristics, some hint, but I don't think we need to know that, you know, explicitly. Yeah, I think it's good enough just to know. I mean, there's some, you know, it's as she, as Lord Jason goes on to say here, you know, her brother is dead and on the Night King's side, and you know, we don't really like, didn't really like her brother, and so kind of fitting right. that he would be the dragon that would get, you know, taken by the Night King. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Now I think we do have just one more raven here. I think this is from Sir Flint Hutchinson. Sir Flint of House Hutchinson. Oh no, I'm sorry. And it's just it's Sir Flint. He is known as the one true king, but I name him a false king. All right. I name him a false king.
We'll get there. So can I read this one, Sir Ezra?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, guys, I'll try to be brief, but I appear to be the only one who has figured this out. I know how the Night King would attack Winterfell even before season 8, episode 1. Look to the trailers. Let me back it up before I expose the truth. Look to how the Night King is a showboat. He could have killed all of them at Hardhome. Instead, he shows off his power by raising the newly killed. He could have used those ice lances and picked off the North of the Wall group, which I've talked about before. He saved it for the dragon. A future theory another time. You know, we'll get there. He pegged the boy to the wall. He is a show-off. So I ask these questions when we see the trailers and the change to the opening map. Why have we not seen detailed battling with the whites? Why is it that all we see is the back of the dead horse as they approach Winterfell? Look back on the season 8 trailers. Big question. Who is the most badass fighter who fears nothing and no one? Answer: Arya Stark. She fears no one. So look to the trailers and ask, why? What scared Arya? What is the one face of death that Arya couldn't face? Where is she when she is running scared? What is the name of one of those trailers? I answer it in reverse. The Crypts of Winterfell. She is running out of the crypts. Ned Stark. The showman, the Night King, will not attack from the outside. He has the numbers, but nothing. No catapults or siege equipments. Were they all except the attack to, where they all expect the attack to come from. You know, when we see them looking out of the walls, he will raise all of the dead in the crypts of Winterfell. The attack will come within. That is why Arya is running scared. She will be alone in the crypts, paying respects to her dad just before the battle. Then the Night King will raise him up. Ned's body will rise first and then put his own head up to scream at Arya. She knows, you know, he was beheaded, but she didn't see it. This will freak her out. Maybe even her mother with the slit throat will rise next to her. She runs. Stop and think. Oh, shit. All of the crypts are rising. And there is one more dead in the and there is more dead in the crypts than above. She is running top speed to tell them all to turn around and face the enemy from within. End of episode two. Episode three will be the longest battle, ending with the fall of Winterfell and the escape to the Iron Islands, facilitated by Theon Greyjoy. Another proof is that in the crypts of Winterfell have been highlighted through all of the seasons. And the change of the new map goes down into the crypt. Why am I the only one who has figured this out? Because I, Flint Anderson Hutchinson, am the one true king. Now bend the knee, Valar Morghulis. So let me say two things.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, much like Mance Rayder, we do not kneel.
Go on.
Okay.
Go on.
And second of all, that's a pretty damn good theory.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah,
definitely gonna have to give this guy some credit. Yeah, you know that is true. There's definitely something going on in the crypts. They show it in the trailer,
yeah.
Or in the opening credits. We've seen it in all of the seasons. It is highlighted. What is down there? You know, the only thing I have about that is, he needs to raise the dead, right? So is, you know, the crypts are huge, but to me it seems like it would be super easy to take over King's Landing, and I would have to imagine that the population of King's Landing is larger than the crypts of Winterfell. Mm-hmm. And certainly on his march down, unless he believes that he's going to raise this dead army because maybe it's Jon Snow or possibly Daenerys. That's the bigger enemy. We need to take care of them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, to me, it would make much more sense to just like, okay, we'll go get Winterfell later. Right. But maybe it's,
yeah.
Or we're just going to take him out, 'cause he's a showboat. That's where he's going. So
yeah,
it's a really, really good point. Really, really good theory. And we're going to find out a little bit more in just a couple days, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there, I like the idea that there would be an enemy from within. I think that's really interesting. Just to see everyone get this. So you wouldn't expect that, right? You're like, wait, what? The enemy's outside. No, they're inside. You know, that would be a huge twist and a great way to kind of end episode two. So I really did like that. I'm not sold on the whole it being her father, but I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, I guess if he, you know, is down there, there was the whole bit about his bones being returned, you know, to Winterfell.
Right. Absolutely.
So there is that. But yeah, I don't know. My other thing is like, I want to know more about the Night King and his power. Can he raise the dead anywhere? You know, like, are there other places that he stopped in when he, you know, was at up there by House Umber? Was he raising? Look, there were no bodies there, right? So as he killed them, you know, and as they slaughtered everyone there, he converted them, you know, and they became a part of the, you know, the army of the undead. But how long, you know, how far back can he go and raise people from the grave? You know what I mean? Is sort of my question, because Lord Adam Parker has brought this up before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
Can he just raise any skeleton anywhere?
Yeah, that's my question. Is what are the limits on his power there? You know, because if it does look, there is some evidence to suggest though that the spirits, the vengeful, whatever they may be, spirits down in the crypts of Winterfell are being guarded by the Iron Door, kept in maybe by the Iron Door with the iron, you know, swords across.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their laps. You know, so there is a lot going on there that might suggest that they're trying to do things, help prevent their ability to rise, you know? So, you know, I don't know. I think it's fascinating. And I kind of feel like there may be another enemy within that could rise, or maybe they don't need to explain that. Maybe it's just like he was able to pick the, there's some connection that he has to the Crypts of Winterfell, and he's able to raise, you know, these individuals. There's something special and magical about that place. You know, I mean, that could be, you know, the answer there. So, but yeah, it's really cool. It is really cool. And I, why is Arya, you know, so freaked out? Why is she, you know, running for her life? She fears nothing, but she looks afraid, you know? So yeah. Although I will say, I will argue that she did look almost as afraid when she was, you know, facing, what's her face at the house of, you know, Black the and Wave. White. I mean, yeah. Right. When she first encounters her now, she from that point forward after the fight, she really, you know, has held her own and has been epic. So, but yeah, I don't know. Really cool, man. I really like it. So, appreciate all the Ravens. I mean, you know, we have tons and tons more. So we'll try to maybe do those, as I said, in musings or, come back to them. Maybe some of them are still relevant. We have some people who did predictions on like the whole season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you did a prediction, Raven, and it kind of covers several episodes, we'll hold on. We'll try to bring that in next follow-up Friday. But yeah, don't forget the trivia. Make sure you hit up the Facebook page and get in, you know, on that, on our giveaway. So, yeah,
absolutely. So, woo. All right, man. Thank you guys so much. It's been a lot of fun, and I look so forward to the future weeks here. But it is time to say farewell. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Season 8, Episode 2.
Yeah, and thanks again to all of our new listeners. You know, we've had some huge support from our listeners, some great reviews on iTunes and what have you. So that really does help the podcast, and we
absolutely
sincerely appreciate it. So, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in a week, and remember.